You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush could be getting an additional $70 billion from Congress to fight the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Democratic lawmakers say they have no other choice in order to finalize a budget for the fiscal year. A mandate for U.S. troops to return from Iraq by late 2008 will not be part of that package. President Bush vetoed the second consecutive bill that would have expanded government-provided health insurance for children. An earlier similar bill was also vetoed because Mr. Bush said both pieces of legislation had fundamental flaws. Another veto may be in the offing for an upcoming energy bill, as Senate Democrats refuse to remove language that slashes tax breaks for big oil and gas companies. The bill passed the House last week, expected to pass the Senate on Thursday. President Bush maintains that the legislation unfairly targets the oil industry. Former CIA directors George Tenet and Porter Goss will testify in a congressional probe focused on destruction of interrogation videotapes of terror suspects. The two men have become key figures in an expanding investigation into the possible cover-up of harsh interrogation techniques described by some as torture. Meantime, current CIA Director Michael Hayden says he had limited knowledge in the matter, but that his agency could have done a much better job in keeping Congress informed about how those tapes were handled. A human rights investigator who visited Guantanamo Bay Prison last week is debating whether detainees' lawyers could mount an adequate defense. During today's address to the UN Human Rights Council, Martin Shannon said his attendance at a hearing for an accused Al-Qaeda guard illustrated a series of problems in providing fair trial at a distant military base. The first formal peace talks between Israelis and Palestinians reportedly did not go well today. In the first formal negotiations in 7 years, accusations and insults flew in today's session. British Prime Minister Gordon Brown says that Allied forces are winning the battle against insurgents in Afghanistan. Brown also maintains that no negotiations will be held with Taliban leaders, that they will be isolated and eliminated instead. Britain will add £450 million in financial aid to troops, the same as $1 billion U.S. dollars. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
You know you can depend on QNN for honest news. Now we want you to know about an honest source of information on one of the country's most desirable vacation destinations, Carmel by the Sea on California's beautiful Central Coast. That source is the best address in Carmel, carmel.com. Just a few simple clicks and you're visiting a website that mirrors all that Carmel stands for. Quality, character, tradition, beauty, the great outdoors by the sea, cultural heritage, and the best shopping. Charming inns, superb dining, world-class art, music, and theater. A cornucopia of delights. So when you're planning your next getaway, go to the best address in Carmel, carmel.com, for tips on everything Carmel. Then put that information to good use by visiting Carmel by the Sea for an unforgettable getaway. Carmel.com.
Today, top banks worldwide announced an emergency injection of cash into short-term funding markets. Involved are the U.S. Federal Reserve, the European Central Bank, Bank of England, and Swiss National Bank. Former Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan says the subprime mortgage crisis was, quote, an accident waiting to happen, unquote. In today's Wall Street Journal, Greenspan conceded that low U.S. interest rates set during his tenure may have contributed to a bubble in current real estate prices. Foreclosures last month jumped nearly 32% from October. More than 72,000 Americans lost their homes during the month, for the most part as a result of the subprime mortgage crisis. Despite a jump in borrowing costs, the number of U.S. mortgage applications rose last week to the highest level since July of 2005, boosted by the demand to purchase and to refinance existing loans. In a major defeat to the U.S. auto industry, a federal judge ruled that California can restrict greenhouse gas emissions from cars and trucks. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 41 points to end at 13,473. The NASDAQ up 18 points at 2671. The S&P 500 up 9 points at 1486. And there's always more at our website, QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
This is a top to a, you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11, oh, 11,
and most
11,
of the
and
amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes, you know, be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is, if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show, right here on the Horn. It's Foxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Foxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-443-2366, or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah. Your host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
Hey!
How's that?
Welcome to Foxed Up for a, let's see, Wednesday night, Thursday morning, about 4 p.m. Sydney, Australia time. I'm Bob Kincaid. I'm not John Fox. I do rant. I've been known to headbang, and sometimes have been accused of being a hippie. In fact, my kids are telling me to get a haircut right now, but it's not really a hippie looking. I'd look more like Andrew Jackson on a bad hair day. Okay, it's Einstein hair. Okay, well, thank you, dear. Also at my side, the indefatigable Agnes, who found out that I was going to do 2 extra hours of programming tonight all by my little lonesome self.
I can't let him be alone.
And decided to sort of come out of retirement long enough to, you know, sit behind the microphone and keep me company and keep me afraid from being afraid of the the dark or the whatever the creepy stuff that's outside in the night. But it's been fun so far. So here's what I'm going to try to do, dear. I will try to honor John by doing or covering at least a couple of stories that I think John would have covered were he able to be here this evening.
That's a good idea.
Okay. So I've got a starter for you, and it's a dandy. John, of course, really is our Enviro host. He is plugged in, so to speak, to the environmental issues that really, you know, they speak very profoundly to his world in Sydney, but not much less so to our world here. Saw a story earlier this evening that said the polar ice cap could be ice-free by next year. Charming.
Get your floaties.
Tell that to the polar bears. But, so, you see something like that, and then you see what follows here. And this is a nice way to sort of dovetail prayer meeting Wednesday with an environmental program on an early, early Thursday. Headline from the UK's Daily Mail. Is it the UK's? Or, yeah, I hope so. I don't know. It's not the American Daily Mail, because this would never be allowed to be printed. Yeah, I think it's the UK. Story by Simon Caldwell. Headline, The Pope Condemns the Climate Change Prophets of Doom. And, of course, I read a headline like that, is my first feeling is, oh, shut up, you old anti-aircraft gunner. Just shut up. 80 years old. Haven't you been on the planet too long?
Don't be disrespectful of your elders, dear.
I'm not. I'm disrespectful of old Nazis. Pope Benedict XVI, otherwise known as Benny the Rat, chief enforcer for former but now dead Pope John Paul II, has launched, straight from the story, a surprise attack on climate change prophets of doom, warning them. Oh, he's warning me. Ooh, I'm scared. Warning them that any solutions to global warming must be based on firm evidence and not on dubious ideology and cannot involve the use of condoms.
What?
Okay, I added the condoms part. Oh. The leader of more than a billion Roman Catholics suggested that fears over man-made emissions melting the ice caps and causing a wave of unprecedented disasters were nothing more than scaremongering. I love hearing a story that uses the phrase scaremongering that is about the, well, you know. Now, well, they certainly didn't scaremonger during the Inquisition. They carried through.
So when was his tour of the polar ice caps? I mean, I'm just curious.
Well,
especially
that's
in the Pope Mobile.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, I know. Speaking of floaties, it's got floaties. But, you know, him giving advice on that is a little bit like him giving parenting advice.
The man wears Prada shoes, okay? I'm sorry.
Yeah, and he wears a hat from the House of Whoville, for God's sakes. But, no, that's not what I'm on about. It's this idea that he has anything constructive to say about a very serious science-driven crisis. He doesn't.
I think it's more of a reality-based crisis because you're seeing the effects.
This kind of stuff just drives me absolutely batty. I can't. I mean, I read this stuff and I can't believe that I'm really, really, really seeing it. The Pope, you know, who's in the made-up miracle, miraculous foolishness business, has said that we can't get all worked up about global warming and not to be scaremongering. You know, there's a big difference between scaremongering and dealing in facts. I understand that for the Pope to talk about dealing in facts is a little bit tough, being as how he's the Pope and all, and he believes that little crackers turn into meat and that kind of stuff.
Hey, to each his own. But don't involve everyone else.
But the German-born pontiff said that while some concerns may be valid, it was vital. It is vital that the international community base its policies on science rather than the dogma of the environmental movement. See, this goes, again, he's speaking in code to the people who want to hear it. When he says dogma of the environmental movement, there's no dogma of the environmental movement. There is scientific fact to suggest that we are boiling the damn planet.
We have found out that it is not, in fact, a matter of climate change that the polar ice caps have melted. It is, in fact, a miracle. And we have seen this shimmering appearance of the Holy Virgin Mary in the blue waters of the melted ice caps, and there were several polar bears who made up her little face.
Well, you just
floating, Xavier.
Well, you just have to wait for the volcanic eruptions that put us in another ice age, and that way the ice will come back and everybody will be happy.
See, this is just so stupid. The 80-year-old fool said the world needed to care for the environment, but not to the point where the welfare of animals and plants was given a greater priority than that of mankind.
Well, let's put it this way, you damn dummy. If the plants and the animals are cared for, that means there's a decent chance that the humans can continue to survive on the planet. Or did nobody tell you that during anti-aircraft gunnery school, you freaking member of the Hitler Youth, you?
He just didn't watch The Lion King. He doesn't understand the circle of life.
Well...
Oh, goody.
Verladida. What does that make me...
A monkey's uncle. Yes.
Hold on, let's see. Ah, darn it. Okay. It is important for assessments in this regard to be carried out prudently in dialogue with experts and people of wisdom, uninhibited by ideological pressure to draw hasty conclusions, and above all, with the aim of reaching agreement on a model of sustainable development capable of ensuring the well-being all while respecting environmental balances.
So he's not putting religion into the foray there, is he?
Oh, heck no.
And
the funny thing is, he's sitting here talking about experts and people of wisdom uninhibited by ideological pressure, and he's all worried about people getting too bananas about protecting the planet because he's afraid he's going to lose his religion. Or not his religion, but he's afraid he's going to lose his paycheck. Because he's scared of the Gaia movement of people beginning to understand that the Earth is an organic whole, that everything that's alive is alive. And and right, not that I'm going to run out and join PETA or anything.
They still have a hit out on me.
Well, at least until they change the name of it to people eating tasty animals. That's a dang tasty looking polar bear in that picture too.
You leave the polar bears alone, Bob. I mean it.
No, but see, again, it's code. It's code. It is right-wing code when he talks about ideological pressure to draw hasty conclusions. What about a little warning there, Popey buddy, about not having Exxon pay scientists to say that it's all a hoax? What about overt fraud there, Benny, old pal? Huh? What are you scared of, Benny, that we're going to ask you to turn the thermostat down in the papal apartment to something less than the temperature of hell that you're trying to accustom yourself to, buddy? Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know if John had seen this story, but I have a feeling, he'd be ranting and headbanging about now. Good God. Okay, let's run to the phones and see which one of these actually has a people on it. Oh, that's it. That's a busy signal. Let's try this one. Don't talk yet. I don't have you turned up. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hey, how are you, Susan?
Hi, sis.
Hi, sis. How are you?
Just fine. If something else for your headbanging enthusiasm, there is a report out that Mount Everest will be bare of ice by 2050.
Not surprised. Kilimanjaro's on the way to it, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
That's what I thought.
But consider the amount of water that mountain produces every year.
The runoff from the spring melts in the Himalayas, doesn't that provide the water source of things like the Ganges?
Yep.
Maybe even the Indus River?
Yep. You are going to have mass famine. And if you want to get right down to it, all it's going to take is for one little tiny one-celled organism called a plankton to die, and then we all die.
Well, yeah.
You You're happy and cheery tonight, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, I'm just. Oh, by the way, Bob, regarding Ben Franklin.
Yeah.
He was not only a member of the synagogue, he was also a member of the Hellfire Club.
Okay, I don't know what the Hellfire Club was.
well, it was a club in England in the late 1700s. They had a taste for orgies that involved rape.
Okay. Is this like an 18th century version of the Bohemian Grove or something?
A nastier version.
Okay. But the point is he maintained a church membership in one church and a synagogue membership. You know, he was just keeping his bases covered.
Yeah, and what's really funny is that the founder of the Hellfire Club and Franklin also collaborated on several hymns together.
It's not you. not something you want running through your mind, huh?
No. But it's true. If you Google Hellfire Club, his name will pop up.
Wow. I didn't know they maintained records.
Extracurricular activities.
They were rather open about it. And when he was over in England trying to get us, agitating for us, for our country, to get its independence, he was also playing rather, he believed in partying hardy.
Yes, he did. One of his more admirable traits, as far as I can tell.
Well, he fell into a really, really nasty crowd. And they were very, very bored.
Really? In England? In late 18th century England? A nasty crowd? Perish
the
thought.
Bored aristocrats with unlimited power and unlimited wealth. And the morals of alley cats.
Take it easy on the alley cats there. They have feelings, too.
Meow!
Oh, mercy. So,
ain't life fun?
Well, you know, I don't... What business does the Pope have in this discussion?
I don't really know. I think it, like you said, I think he's scared. He's scared of losing control of his people.
I hate to tell you
this, guys, but you've been losing control of your people for quite a few years.
How are the floods there, Susan?
The flooding is more or less stopped. It was real interesting around here for a while because we couldn't go anywhere because all the roads were cut. There was a town called Vernonia that was flooded out.
I saw the mudslides the other day.
Oh, the mudslides were just down the highway from us.
Yeah.
And so that wasn't, you know, it was about 20 miles from here. And we're on this twisty highway that's got these nice steep hillsides that they came in like idiots and logged off.
And it brought it all just crashing down. I mean, it was amazing.
I can't understand. Now they're standing around wondering, why are we getting so many mudslides?
Yeah. Well, when you take up the protection for the soil, then that's what you're going to get. And I mean, it was just the magnitude. And I realized it wasn't far from you and Gene.
Yeah. Gene, it's quite a ways from Gene because Gene's all the way over on the other side of a mountain pass from there.
Okay.
So he has a complete ridge of kind of minor mountains between him and the mudslide. The big flooding was on I-5 northbound where a river broke through a dike and just completely wiped out Interstate 5.
Just to flesh this out a little bit more for you while we've got you on the line, Susan, Benny the Rat, the John Paul II's old enforcer, he said this is all part of his message that he sends to the world at the beginning of the new year, but since they're meeting in Bali, he wanted to get his 2 cents worth in. and put it out a little bit early. And he believes the case, well, let's say, his remarks reveal that while the Pope acknowledges that problems may be associated with unbridled development and climate change, he believes the case of global warming to be overhyped.
Well, when the massive famines start because the the glaciers are gone and they provide a huge amount of water that people drink, we'll just have to ask him about that again.
Well, I guess there's somebody trying to curry favor with him because this is the reason that I was kind of wishing John was here to discuss it. Cardinal George Pell, the Australian Cardinal, I guess they get one.
Yeah.
He's the Archbishop of Sydney, has raised a bit of a stink because he noted that the atmospheric temperature of Mars has risen by a half a degree Celsius and said, and I quote, "The industrial military complex up on Mars can't be blamed for that." And that was a jab at Australian scientists and their claims that carbon emissions are forcing temperatures on Earth to rise by almost 5 degrees by 2070, barring drastic solutions.
Yeah, but we don't know what conditions are.
Mars doesn't have anything to keep the temperature from going up or down. It is subject to solar flares and stuff like that.
Exactly.
That's what our little atmosphere is supposed to do. It's a regulatory function of this living, breathing planet.
Yeah. I hate
me some morons. I really, really do.
Yeah, and if, you know, every time I run into one of these idiots, I tell them, if you want to see the ultimate in global warming, fine. Look at Venus.
Yeah, warm
that
and
is
getting warmer.
Global warming.
Yeah.
That's a greenhouse effect with the brakes off completely.
All too sadly true. Susan, thank you very much, dear. It's always good to talk to you.
No problem. Nice to talk to you and Agnes. By the way, Agnes, that package I was telling you about?
Yes.
It's on its way. There are two items in it.
Thank you.
Have a nice night.
As soon as it gets here, I'll relay the reaction.
Oh, you do that.
I love you, and blessed be.
Blessed be.
Bye now, Susan. Take care. Oh, yeah, inside stuff. Okay, that was our news ninja, Susan, calling from Columbia City, Oregon. Quick break. We'll come back. This seems fitting. That's one of the fun things I get to do on John's show. I get to do a little DJing here and there, and I think this will work nicely. You're listening to The Horn. We'll be back with All Foxed Up.
The sun, red and enormous, began to sink into the western sky. And simultaneously, the moon began to rise on the other side of the river with its own glorious shade of red, coming up out of the trees like a russet firebird. The sun and the moon seemed to acknowledge each other, and they moved in both apposition and concordance in a breathtaking dance of light across the oaks and the palms. My father watched it, and I thought he would cry again. He had returned to sea, and his heart was a low country heart. African drums are silent, and the wingos of poets at last. Out on the Fusky Island, the bulldozers. On borrowed days and there,
They rose from the grave for the weak and the brave heart. History was there for the making. And the wilders surrounded the condo, forming a frail human fence. And they shouted out loud to the roar of the crowd, same old story, for dollars and cents. Now I realize who killed the Prince of Tide. They were such good friends to me. Heaven knows that God decides just when to kill the Prince of Tides. You can dance,
you can dance,
every dance
you can
dance. Gives you,
you can dance.
I must hold you tight.
You can dance.
You can smile.
You can smile.
Every smile
you
for
can
the
smile.
Man. Hold your
you
hand
smile.
Beneath the pale moonlight. But don't forget who's taking you home and in whose arms you're gonna be. Say the last. Beach music, beach music, just plays on. The white porpoise comes to me at night, singing in the river of time, with a thousand dolphins in radiant attendance, bringing charismatic greetings from the Prince of Tides.
Oh, that was just nice. Prince of Tides, Jimmy Buffett, from the disc Hot Water. 88. I grow old. I shall wear the bottoms of my trousers rolled. And listen, you know, I don't want to get anybody all bent out of shape. You know, I don't care what you believe. It's nothing to me. It's less than nothing to me what you believe. It simply doesn't matter to me. You know, if it gets you through the night, cool. But I really do have to draw a line when a man who knows absolutely nothing on the subject decides to inject himself into a debate upon which hangs the literal future of humanity on this planet. There's an old saying, lead, follow, or get out of the way. Looks like Pope Benny needs to get in the last category. Get out of the way. If you don't want to be a part of the solution, you're part of the problem. I'm sorry if you reverence the dude or you think that he's something better than the next human being standing next to him or some starving African or somebody in Thailand, a Thai Catholic who's burned up with HIV because, you know, this crowd says that people shouldn't put little latex thingies on their Johnsons and keep from getting killed by the act of love. You know, your reverence for him is fine. Please do not expect me to extend it to him. Nothing personal, okay? Let's go to the phones. Our good friend Alan the trucker is on the road and on the line. Hey, Alan, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. You know, the Knights of Columbus, I think they are a group of people, of Catholics, that are very wealthy, aren't they?
I don't know how wealthy they are. I mean, they're basically, they were formed as the Catholic answer to Freemasonry.
Mm-hmm. I think some of the wealthiest people in the world are Catholics, and he's probably protecting their interests. What do you think?
Alan, that's a little too far down the conspiracy path for me to travel. This guy does what he does for his own twisted reasons. I personally suspect that he's afraid that if people start caring about the planet, they'll see that that a lot of what he professes to be necessary for a person to get into heaven or whatever might just be a bunch of made up bunk.
I found it ironic that a pope would be saying that people who are talking about global warming are doomsayers or whatever, they're a bunch of fearmongers, when the Catholic Church has been doing that for centuries.
Well, they have been, but you know, it's, you got to understand, it's okay if they do it. God told them to.
Yeah.
I know that's a chuckle to me and a chuckle to you, but that's, you know, they get up in the hierarchy of the church, and most churches too, for that matter, get up in the morning wondering what God's going to tell them today.
Yeah, that what you played about the Mormons earlier, was that satire or is it true?
No, that wasn't satire.
So that's what they actually believe.
Yeah, you've got to really get you've got to get like the 32nd degree initiation and the magic underwear. But you know, when you do, they will tell you that when you die, you're going to be a god and you're going to go and screw your brain silly with a bunch of wives and populate a planet or something.
And that sounds similar to Islam.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was talking with someone earlier this evening, and he pointed out that, you know, basically what Joseph Smith did is he ripped off Islam in large part and repackaged it for a white frontier pressing Americana. And I mentioned that, you know, and that's true right down to the idea, you know, he says, you know, I am the seal of the prophets. Joseph Smith did, you know, nobody else can be me after me. And that is a straight up lift from Islam, because, you know, that's what they, you know, after Muhammad, yeah, it might be some smart people, might be some godly people, but nobody's going to be a prophet anymore. That's it. That's the end of it. Nobody gets to be a prophet. And that's Joseph Smith to a T.
Well, I've heard the story about Muhammad. I think his, some young woman who was related to him, that went to his nephew, somebody married, he decided he wanted her. So he worked out the religion so he could marry her. I think did away with that relative that she was married to.
I don't necessarily know about that. And again, you know, the finer, outside of the insane stuff that hurts the rest of the world, I don't care what people believe. You know, you don't have a right to make me believe it. You don't have a right to put me to the sword for not believing it. And for my part, you know, I won't go quietly. But the thing is, it's where that line intersects, Alan, where believing insane things hurt the rest of the world. And that's where, you know, that's where I think, you know, I'm sort of standing in the middle of the road going, stop. They don't stop, of course.
Yeah, what we're supposed to believe in is the Constitution.
Well, we don't even have to believe in it. See, Alan, that's one of those words that I really, really get the heebie-jeebies over believing. You don't have to believe in the Constitution. You can go see it in Washington, D.C. It's real. You can know it's a fact. You can know that the words on the page are fact.
Yeah, and not only that, our system of government protects religions, I would think.
Well, that's what the First Amendment is designed to do.
It makes a field where they can use their religion freely, whereas if we were a theocracy, they couldn't do that. But they don't seem to realize that.
No, they don't. And they don't understand that if you get to pick one, that's to the exclusion of everyone else. I mean, they don't understand, you know, all these people, America is a Christian nation. Which Christian? Which sect? I mean, let's see, what's his name? Southern Baptist hoity-toity was on CNN the other morning. Oh, yeah, Dickland. Sounds like some sort of pornographic theme park. The Southern Baptist Convention, Dickland. He was on CNN talking about, you know, Willard Romney and his religious weirdness, and went all the way through the interview and never mentioned for a moment that if you go to the webpage of the Southern Baptist Convention cult, that they will tell you in no uncertain terms that Mormonism is a major cult / sect in North America. They also use Mormonism as an example in highlighting four of the six characteristics that the Southern Baptist Convention cult uses to answer the question, what is a cult or a sect? And, of course, they don't include themselves. They're the real religion, Alan. You know how it goes.
They're all cults. I guess the cult means you believe in some supernatural power, doesn't it?
It's a hierarchy. Technically speaking, you go from personal belief to shamanistic cult to yada, but it's a sort of a road marker. It's a signpost along the road of the evolution. And yes, they do the evolution of religions from their origins to their ecclesiastical statehood.
I find it ironic that people who claim they've had like a near-death experience and they were like brought back to life or something like that, when they come back to consciousness, they say it doesn't matter what religion you belong to, just as long as you're compassionate towards other people. Maybe there's some people who've come through that experience and say that their religion is the right one, but I never heard of any.
No, nor I. Although, you know, people are forever finding the Virgin Mary in a grilled cheese sandwich and stuff like that. And, you know, for other places, I don't, you know, for all I know, Hindus do a grilled cheese sandwich and find Ganesh. I don't know. It's a function of people looking for hope and looking for help in a world that's pretty scary. And from the time that we came down out of the trees, Alan, the world has been scary, because there's always been something out there in the dark that can get us, and we know it, and it gives us the creeps.
We've got to move past that, I would think.
Well, you would hope, but we clearly haven't. We'll know that we've gotten past that when religion disappears.
Mm-hmm. I hope that stuff that she was talking about, being Franklin, isn't true.
I don't know. I don't know anything about the Hellfire Club. I'd never heard of it until then.
She mentioned he went to Britain. He went to France.
He was in Britain for some negotiations too, I do believe. But the point that, you know, I mean, we do know that Ben was a randy old goat. But I kind of tend to say, you know, good on you, because, you know, you're living your life.
Yeah, I was thinking if the Fundies hear about things like this, they would say, this is a reason to change the Constitution.
In what direction, Alan?
Oh, towards them, you know. That's the way they would want
it. Yeah, it never changes away from them, does it?
Yeah, they want a theocracy. They just can't see what theocracy has done around the world and through history.
Well, no, but they do see it, Alan. They do see it. But in seeing it, they say, yeah, but we're not like that. We're the good guys. And they do it while they're sharpening their swords.
Sure, but that's what they all say.
Right, because God told us. But yeah. They are so benighted that, that they fail to understand, or maybe it's willful ignorance, that this is the very problem that America was designed to solve, where you don't have people running around killing each other, saying, no, it's my God, no, it's mine, die, heretic. You know, we just say, welcome everybody. Come on in, get comfy, have your followers. Hey, we won't even tax you. My God, Alan, can you imagine... can you imagine the problems we could solve in America if we lifted the tax-exempt status on the churches?
Lifted the tax status.
In other words, made churches actually pay tax for the, you know, the stuff that they sell, you know, the tickets into heaven and out of hell, that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. We definitely shouldn't be giving them money for this place initiative stuff.
Yeah, it's bad enough we don't ask them to pay their way in America. What's more, you're right, that really did sort of draw the bright line. It's bad enough we don't ask them to pay their way and they sort of skate for free. But secondarily, in the last 8 years, we've tried to actively give them money and you know, we've got a freak Supreme Court that said, cool, give them more.
It's not my imagination. This seems like I've seen, like, these mega churches really grow in the last 5-6 years around the country.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think it's because of our tax dollars, because the money going to them through the faith-based initiative. You see them driving around in these fancy new buses.
Yeah, and there's also the herd instinct of the American people and human beings in general, because they tend to go toward what they think is socially desirable. You know, if you have to be a member of, if you have to be a member of a mega church to get ahead, by God, they'll join a mega church.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that's what causes that level of growth.
Yeah, that leaves people out who don't want to belong to a church like that. You know, what if they want aid?
Well, precisely. That's like that Steve King Congress creature from Iowa, who said, you know, we need to all be confident that America is Christian. That doesn't make me confident, Alan. That makes me very, very nervous.
Yeah, me too. I can't imagine being of some other religion, you know, and really believing in it, and then you have to go, I mean, you're real poor, and you need some aid, and you have to go to a Christian church to get your aid, and then you have to go listen to a preacher or something. It just
happens all over America all the time.
That doesn't sound like America to me.
And the saddest thing is there's another way to fix it. You know, instead of saying, you know, like that, instead of quoting Jesus and say, the poor ye have always with ye, why not try to make people not poor?
Yeah.
Why not create jobs, and I'm not talking about the private sector, because the private sector has proven itself notoriously unreliable, but why not create programs that do things that America needs done, like, you know, roads, bridges, and teach people to be road builders and bridge builders? Why not do that? Well, that's a social program, if you ask a Republican. That's just evil.
Oh, socialism is a good thing, I think.
Well, I think so too, in many respects. I mean, I don't think profit needs to be involved with people's well-being. I don't think profit needs to be involved with the delivery of basic goods and services to people, like, you know, electricity, water, that sort of thing, maintaining the roads. But, you know, that's the direct opposite direction from where we have we've gone in recent years. Alan, I'm pretty much I'm close to the end here, but I really enjoy talking to you, and by all means, be safe this evening.
All right. Thanks for listening to me, and have a good evening.
It's always a joy talking with you, Alan. You take care. Bye now.
Bye.
Speaking of creating jobs and making people's lives better, did you see this one sort of slide by the radar? You remember, of course, what was it, a few weeks ago when the head of the Consumer Product Safety Commission went before Congress and said, yeah, look, everything coming from China is poisonous. We know that. But we don't need any extra money in our budget, and we don't need any extra inspectors, and we don't need any extra anything. Just leave us alone, okay? If a few poor kids get poisoned chewing on the damn Barbie, Well, you know, that's the free market at work. Goodbye. Remember that? Well, it turns out that that is not entirely the philosophy of the Bush administration, because while the Consumer Product Safety Commission doesn't need any extras, even though they desperately need extras, and while the Social Security Administration needs a hell of a lot more than any 150 new ALJs to handle 775,000 pending appeals, there is another organization that didn't need any help, at least not this kind of help, and that is inside the Department of Labor. The Bush administration that didn't want help in the Social Security Administration, the Bush administration that doesn't want help in the Consumer Product Safety Commission, has added to the rosters and roles and payrolls and budget of a unit inside the Department of Labor that is staffed by political operatives who have gone absolutely screaming hog wild using federal reporting requirements to try to undermine unions and to wage a political misinformation campaign against them. The Bush administration, oh, well, you know, we want to deregulate. Yeah, regulation bad, deregulation good. Not at the Department of Labor, not in the Office of Labor Management Standards. They have rule made till they're blue in the face, writing new rules to make it almost impossible to run a viable union. Investigating union leaders and members, designed to overwhelm unions with paperwork and make it so Byzantine that they screw up and get into non-compliance whether they meant to or not, inflating the number of criminal cases involving union leaders and members. Hello, corrupt Justice Department. No, they wouldn't have anything to do with that now, would they? And their latest requirement, a new conflict of interest report. As of January 1st, union members will have to attest that even their car loans don't constitute a potential conflict of interest. Who's running this dog and pony show? Why, it's Don Todd. He's a former Republican National Committee strategist, and he was one of George H.W. Bush's strategizers back in 1988, who convinced Lee Atwater, remember him, he died of a rotten brain that spread to his head from his rotten soul. He was the man behind Willie Horton, this Don Todd. And they are trying to hassle ordinary union members. We're rank and file, okay? We're not talking about the leadership even. You get a home mortgage, you get a car loan, you have to prove that it didn't come to you as a function of a conflict of interest. Isn't that charming? In a world where, even though he says, you know, oh, I'm not going into a business or nothing, Trent Lott announces his retirement, and everybody under the sun knows he's about to go into a lobbying business with a former senator by the name of John Breaux of Louisiana. Oh, no, I'm not. I ain't doing it. And it turns out that he's already got brolott.org or .com registered. But we're afraid that some guy who lays block for a living and happens to belong to a union and therefore has health care and has a pension to keep him from being, you know, one paycheck away from abject misery. Oh, we got to make sure he doesn't have a conflict of interest. Pity Wayne's already in bed. This probably would just give him the screams. But he already knows about it. Department of Labor spokesman Richard Manning said by email to the Washington Post, this is all based on a report by the Center for American Progress.
The Center for American Progress fails to recognize that Congress enacted the Labor Management Reporting and Disclosure Act in 1959 with the express purpose of safeguarding the hard-earned dues of union members and their right to democratic union elections.
Huh. How about that? Democratic union elections, and yet Repiglicans in the Senate stopped us from having nice, fair, democratic card check agreements in organizing cases. Dirty, rotten, lying SOBs. You know, it's amazing. Among other things, in 1992, Newt Gingrich wrote a memo to then-Labor Secretary Lynn Martin telling her she had to boost the office's reporting requirements, quote, to weaken our opponents and encourage our allies. Remember Grover Norquist? Grover Norquist, the guy who said he wanted to strangle the federal... No, he wanted to weaken the federal government till he could drown it in a bathtub? He said, quote, every dollar that is spent on disclosure and reporting is a dollar that can't be spent on other labor union activities. Amazing. I think we're going to have to get the author of the report, Scott Lilly, on the program. What do you think? Might be a good idea. So thanks, everybody. Thanks for putting up with me for 5 hours tonight, jumping. Gee whiz. And I know Agnes was tickled to death to be back with you for a little bit. It'll all start up again tomorrow. Hope you'll be here. Listener-supported, independent, liberal conversation. The only place you can get it like you get it here is here. And the only way it happens is if you make sure that it continues to happen. So, as we say here on All Foxed Up, be good, be green, we'll see you tomorrow.
If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, tell you that sometimes it's easier to desire and pursue the attention and admiration of 100 strangers than it is to accept the love and loyalty of those closest to me. And I would tell you that sometimes I prefer to look at myself through someone else's eyes, eyes that aren't clouded with the tears of knowing what an asshole I can be as yours are. If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, I might be able to listen in silence to your concerns, rather than hearing everything as an accusation or an indictment against me. And I would tell you that sometimes I use sex to avoid communication. It's the best escape when we're down on our luck. But I can express more emotions than laughter, anger, and let's f***. If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about...
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good morning, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop, part of the Dialogue Series here at WPFW. I want to welcome listeners throughout Washington and also those from the Head On Radio Network who've joined us for the show. It was a sickeningly familiar week last week. A mentally disturbed young man walks into a place and starts